Previously on Dry Powder, Kristen Olson, Global Head of Alternatives for Wealth at Goldman Sachs, described why the past few years have been among the most exciting of her career.
What we've been seeing over the past few years is an incredible amount of innovation in just trying to figure out how to actually penetrate that investor base with alternative investment products.
Today on the show, we'll consider the larger competitive landscape and what it will take to serve a broader base of investors. The massive build-out of technology and mobile-friendly infrastructure is a critically important piece of the puzzle, she observes, but it's only one piece.
If we don't execute on it well, or if the structures are ill-designed, we are going to have potholes along the way in this democratization trend. And, you know, what are the knock-on effects to individual investors who have to experience potentially some of those potholes as we evolve and develop these new investment products?
I'll ask Kristen what potholes the industry will need to avoid on the road ahead, and just how far we are from truly democratizing private markets.
I just see what it takes to manage these, operate these, report these, administer these. The break-evens on these are, like, you have to scale.
I'm Hugh MacArthur, chairman of Bain's Global Private Equity Practice, and this is Dry Powder. Kristen, how close are we, do you think, to truly democratizing private markets? How fast are we going to reach beyond the ultra-high net worth individual to get all the way down to, say, what people are calling mass affluent? And what does that look like in terms of a product from where we are today?
So we're moving pretty quickly, but, you know, I think we've only scratched the surface. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think what you've really seen, call it roughly last 5 years, is just the beginning of the adoption and evolution of evergreen funds at large and alternatives.
Right.
And those funds are generally fully funded up front, which is a big change because traditional alternatives, you know, you commit and they call down over generally 3 to 5 years and there's distributions. Mm-hmm. Why is that a big change? Because even if you had the net worth to participate in alternatives, you might not have done it because it was too complicated. Right? How do you manage capital calls? How do you manage distributions? So these evergreens were all the capital funds up front have made it much easier to allocate to alternatives. Fully funded up front, modicum ability to redeem, modicum ability to have some liquidity. In some cases, easier tax reporting. Some of these will have a 1099 versus a K-1, mm-hmm. right? And getting a K-1 might be a hurdle for someone who's never had that before in their tax filings. So that's helped. And so you've seen that part of the market grow pretty significantly over the last 5 years. I think 5 years ago, there was maybe $50 billion of AUM in these evergreens. And, you know, today that's $400 billion plus, right? But still small in the grand scheme of the addressable market. I think if you talk about true democratization and where are we going, you're seeing a lot of frenetic energy. You're seeing a lot of innovation and development, very early innings. To really get to mass affluent and, quote, retail, it's going to be products that have even easier implementation, right? And so you're seeing a lot of new interval fund structures. Mm-hmm. So those make it even easier because you can buy those with a ticker. So now you've eliminated the subscription document process. And so products like that that are obviously very young in their evolution, if those perform and those work as designed, I think then you will start to see more of those investment products and that will then help further the democratization. But again, early innings on the product design and product structures, and as we discussed earlier, there's a lot of education that's going to have to happen.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Interval funds, tender offer funds. We've just had an executive order signed that makes defined contribution now and retirement funds much more accessible. Defined benefit has obviously been accessible for a while, but defined contribution and 401ks getting access, that's trillions of dollars, potentially target date funds being a solution there. There's lots of new things, as you pointed out, coming to the market. And that tells me that this market and the competitive nature of the market is likely going to change over the next kind of 5 or 10 years. So how do you see competition evolving in the space as new players enter, whether they're traditionally been distributors and now they're going to have product, or they traditionally have had product and now they need to get into distribution? And what do you think Goldman Sachs' competitive advantages are as this world changes?
Yeah, look, you know, maybe I'll start with the last part. When I think about our competitive advantage, I think it's the fact that we are a top alternative investment manager, so we have scale. I think the fact that we have a long history in alternatives, so in addition to scale, we started our private equity business back 30 years ago. Our secondary business started in 1998, right? We have longevity, we have tenure, and we have a lot of track record in the space. And then we have breadth of alternative investment product, right? If you think about all of the things that we do in the Goldman Sachs alternatives business, I sort of describe it as we have all of the ingredients, and then we have to figure out, you know, what is the right mixology of those for different objectives, different investor channels. And then, you know, thinking about the different wrappers that we put them in. But the thing that I think we have an advantage on is we have all of these raw ingredients. The other part is I think being part of a global investment bank will continue to give us advantages in terms of sourcing across all the different alternative investment strategies, which frankly is paramount when you think about these evergreen vehicles and how much they're scaling. You need a lot of origination to be able to feed these investment products, because these investment products, as we talked about earlier, need a lot of diversification of different deals underneath the hood, right? So I think that's a very important distinguishing factor and something that sets us apart. And then the other piece, I think, for us in terms of a competitive advantage is we happen to have a leading wealth business that has always had alternatives as a core differentiator of our wealth platform. So what we're doing now, though, is how do we take those learnings and evolve those for a broader aperture of individual investors, from ultra-high net worth, now spreading that down to high net worth and the mass affluent. So I think that's where we start from an advantage perspective. But when you talk about competition, you know, and how's that going to change, you know, I think that scale is going to matter. I think having multiple different types of strategies is going to matter, as opposed to a monoline alternative investment manager. They're not going to be able to really reach into this democratization trend in a big way, right? Because again, they just don't have enough of the ingredients to have the types of investment products that are going to resonate or that are appropriate for individual investors. And then I think there'll be some other entrants that come into the space. You know, you have different facilitators, technology platforms that are going to find their way into how to democratize this space for individual investors.
Absolutely. Digital tech platforms, traditional asset managers. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people in the space. It feels like it's going to be a little messy, honestly, for the next few years as it gets sorted out. But what sort of technology investments do you think GPs are going to need to do as we get more democratized in individuals? Because I'm going to want to look at my private assets on my phone in the same way that I do my public assets. And I'm probably going to want to see things like daily pricing, even if things don't trade. And all of this implies to me that sort of GPs are going to have to up their game in the technology and in the systems that they're putting together in order to serve all of their clients, not just individuals. What's your view on that?
I think you're exactly right. I would say there's probably going to be a fair amount of technology spend that you're not even going to realize is necessary, because it's actually not even going to be what's servicing your ability to see it on your phone. It's going to be the technology that's required to just be able to actually administer and manage these types of investment products, because you're moving from very analog management of closed-end drawdown private equity funds to much more complicated perpetual evergreen funds that are having monthly subscriptions, in some cases monthly redemptions, quarterly redemptions, by the way, moving to daily. To be able to actually process all of that, track it, administer it, that's going to require big nuts and bolts infrastructure spend for a lot of these GPs. And I think there'll be a fair amount of uplift there. Frankly, even just the number of investors, right? If you think about a traditional private equity fund back 10, 15 years ago, you know, they had maybe 20, 30 big institutional LPs. You look at these evergreen funds, you're talking about tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of individual investors that they're servicing. So inherently, technology spend is going to go up to be able to just support these investment products. And then you get to client experience. People are going to want a good client experience on these and are going to need to think about the digital transparency, right, through your phone. And then you get to your daily pricing comment, which industries is moving there because, as we talked a little bit about interval funds are going to require it. And so the industry is going to have to figure out how to price something daily that historically they were pricing quarterly. But the thing that I would caution is, one of the hidden benefits always of alternatives was the fact that you didn't look at it every day.
Right.
And it forced you to stay the course and be a long-term investor. And if we go to daily pricing, I get concerned that that hidden benefit starts to go out the window. I think the thing, if I were thinking about your audience and if anybody was thinking about trying to get into the space, and by the way, there's lots of FOMO. I mean, I think the thing that you hit on, there's a lot of cost to actually running these things. Like you talked about in terms of tech, but I just see what it takes to manage these, operate these, report these, administer these. The break evens on these are like, you have to scale. So I think the one thing that I just wonder is like, if you're not in an asset class that can really scale, you better do the math on what it costs to run these because they're very expensive.
Totally agree.
Yes. That would be my cautionary tale. It's just really make sure you understand the cost. And then also, I said earlier, you really need a lot of origination. You think about it, if you're successful, you're taking in money every month, right? You've created the flywheel. And this is where I go to the complexity of these things. You have to very closely match the money coming in from your investors with the deal flows. And you can use some credit facilities to smooth things out and pull on warehouses and everything. Right. But if you go through a lull of deal flow, you either have to stop taking inflows or you're going to have drag, yep. right? Because you're going to be sitting in cash. And so that's the reason why I just harp on this origination point, especially when you look at some of the people that have been super successful that have gone in 24 months from zero to 10 plus billion. What are they doing every month, right? With the billion to 2 billion or whatever that's coming in.
Yeah. How are you finding the high quality deals?
Because I laugh because we all know there haven't been a lot of private equity deals happening. You know, there hasn't been a lot of activity.
Right.
Yet you've got, you know, $10, $15 billion evergreen funds that are taking in $500 million a month more that have to deploy.
Fascinating.
The other big debate too is at what point does performance matter in these for investors?
Yeah.
Because we're early, but at some we fast forward, like, is capital going to move around with performance? How important is performance going to be? Like, I think the performance question will come up.
Well, certainly you've had a very privileged seat and an educated seat over the last 27 years in watching the private wealth markets evolve. Tell me, if I could ask you just to gaze into your crystal ball, what's the one thing that you're most excited about over the next 5 years as you roll this clock forward? And what's the one thing that gives you the most pause?
I mean, maybe it's the same thing. It's the opening of the aperture more broadly of alternatives to individual investors, right? And I think it's incredibly exciting to watch. When you think about how you can stay in a single space for so long, and with, you know, having spent 27 years at Goldman, but almost all of it in alternatives and wealth, it is because of the dynamism, right, of those two things, wealth and alternatives. And you're seeing that today in a really pronounced way, just in terms of how fast the industry is evolving to serve the needs of individuals. So I think in terms of what's the most exciting or interesting thing, it's that theme. Mm. The other side of the coin is, it's one of the things that gives me the most pause, because if we don't execute on it well, or if the structures are ill-designed, you know, we are going to have potholes along the way, you know, and what are the knock-on effects to individual investors who have to experience potentially some of those potholes as we evolve and develop these new investment products.
Kristen, this has been an absolutely fascinating discussion. I've learned a lot. I'm sure our audience has as well. Thank you again for taking the time to come on Dry Powder. It's been terrific.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm Hugh MacArthur. Thank you for listening.